think DEI training might have been a mistake.
Okay. First of all, I'm just going to start by saying bold statement, considering we offer DEI training, but it's okay. We'll come back to that.
Welcome to We're Not Recording, candid conversations brought to you by Athena. Athena is the company that pays Melanie and my salary, so we would be remiss not to shout them out, though we promise this isn't another boring business podcast. Athena makes compliance training people actually like and has a bunch of other required tools your company probably needs. Everything from employee hotlines, HR case management tools, phishing simulator, and more. If you don't like your company's mandatory training, tell your HR or legal teams to check Athena out.
All right, so Roxanne, earlier today we were talking about all the executive orders, what it means for DEI, why are people so spun up? You know, what does this mean for meritocracy versus DEI? Do they have to necessarily be mutually exclusive? And you shared a pretty spicy take about DEI training. I just want to kick it off. Tell us your spicy take.
I feel myself warm already. Because any topic in this just general vicinity is terrifying. But here is my spicy take. My spicy take is net-net, I think DEI training might have been a mistake.
Okay. First of all, I'm just going to start by saying bold statement, considering we offer DEI training, but it's okay. We'll come back
many
to that.
Many reasons this is a bold statement. Yep. So, to include it's against my economic interest, yes.
My question to you is, let's put it out there for anyone who's listening in. Why exactly does this feel so scary to say? What's so spicy about it? What do you worry is going to happen?
Oh, the doom spiral is infinite. But I think that, one, I think anything in this general space actually kind of feels like in this particular moment in time, it's not totally narcissistic to believe that you could wake up one morning and somehow have been eviscerated on the interwebs. For some, you know, line that you had. I am not a public person. I'm in no way a celebrity, any of those things. But it somehow feels like occasionally people just find themselves in the middle of this discourse would be a really polite word for it. And that is scary. Then going one level deeper as to why it's scary, I think, Melanie, we share a lot of this, like, I care deeply about workplaces that I want to work at, that like everybody can thrive at. Like I want these issues aren't like abstract academic issues to me, right? Like I was a woman in the army. Like, you know, these sort of issues that are in the headlines feel like they hit personally, and so I would hate for my spicy take to be taken as somehow evidence that the entire project of having the workplace include a wide variety of individuals was somehow wrong. Like, that's not what I mean. I mean, the tactic was wrong and the strategy or the goal is still right, but it just feels like, you know, that could be taken out of context. That's the fear.
So let's jump into it because, first of all, I will just plus one everything that you said. We've talked about this a lot, and the reality is, to be honest, I don't personally post a ton about DEI publicly for exactly the reasons that you said. It's not that I don't care deeply about DEI. And in fact, you know this, like as we've worked on internal Athena policies, I'm always thinking about, okay, but how do we make this more inclusive? How do we make sure that everyone is set up for success with this? And yet I don't want to talk about it publicly because to your point, it's just so scary.
Are your fears around the same general doom spiral that mine are, or do they have a different flavor?
Yeah, interesting question, because I think for me it goes in two directions. One, similar flavor of doom spiral. I could say one thing, well-intentioned or not, I use the wrong word, and it inadvertently offends people or it gets misinterpreted, and now the focus becomes less on, you know, how are we moving the needle forward and more on, you know, I used the wrong word, or I didn't, you know, I didn't think about every angle of things as opposed to it feeling a collaborative. I think sometimes, understandably, because it can be such a sensitive topic, the inclination is to sort of jump on everything wrong, as opposed to say like, hey, good starting point. Here's what you missed. Let's collaborate. Or, hey, I disagree, but let's do so respectfully. I think understandably, these things tie into people's personal identities. And so it's just a scarier, more charged topic. I think the second reason is pretty tied into that last point I just made, which is, you know, I have my own identity, and I worry sometimes that as a woman of color, when I say a thing, it will be interpreted with additional unspoken things that I either do or don't want to come with that statement, literally just by virtue of me being who I am. And so I'm just hyper aware of how things are perceived differently based on a number of factors. And so I just, it makes me think twice. Yeah.
So we're both scaredy cats.
Both scaredy cats. And I don't think we're alone, for the record. I think that a lot of these things can be scary to talk about from a place of goodness, right? From a place of good intent. You just don't want to inadvertently offend someone. But, you know, as we've talked about, I think, unfortunately, that fear, that lack of psychological safety means that we're not able to have the most productive conversations, and we miss out on key opportunities to level up approaches and not get into this echo chamber of there is one right way. And if you question it, you know, potentially, you know, that's, you know, you're sending inadvertent signals that you hate DEI altogether, which obviously we don't. With that said, I actually would love to dig in, because I'll be honest, when you first wrote, hey, I think DEI training was a mistake, obviously my inner HR heart was like, Roxanne, what are you talking about? And then of course you brought with it classic characteristic nuance. So tell us a little bit more. When you make this bold statement, I think DEI training was a mistake in the way that we did it, what exactly do you mean?
And I think the we here, I'm going to go like corporate America or some sort of very, very broad we. We can get into the specifics of, we are both at the same business that, among other things, offers DEI training, which we can talk about, but I think the larger conversation is kind of more interesting. Okay, so my thought process is that there was a large amount of research, to my understanding, all in one direction, all pointing to the same thing, which is that DEI training, unconscious bias training, didn't really affect how people thought. And it gets worse in that, and to the extent it did, it caused a backlash, which I think makes sense as a general adult, or honestly even a parent of a toddler or a four-year-old, that when you tell people they have to think a certain way, there is a knee-jerk reaction to be like, no, I don't. And so I think one suffers just from the fact that like research isn't behind it. Two, I think it was probably one of the most visible, universal experiences of the DEI movement. If you were just a random engineer at Acme Corp, you may have only learned about your company's massive commitment to DEI through seeing a social media post that your company made, then the company rolling out DEI training, and maybe that was it. I have been conducting an informal poll of friends who are probably very tired of me doing this, and asking what a DEI policy is. And they're all saying things that I have put into buckets that I have completely made up that are in the buckets of DEI training. So they are things like ERGs, events where you have a speaker from a certain background talk about that background's experience in American history or whatever. They're kind of these, performative seems too derogatory a term because I think there were really good intentions to it. But the nerdiest and best description I could put is they were kind of orthogonal to the business. Like most companies are not a business that is about, you know, moving forward the experience of Asian Americans in the US, right? They were like a random tech company, a random manufacturing organization. And they rolled out all of these initiatives. And I think employees thought of those initiatives as DEI initiatives. And so when we say we're getting rid of DEI, they think we're getting rid of those initiatives, great. I think that there is the second bucket, and my really bad descriptor has been Coinbase initiatives. And as a like caveat, I'm speaking of companies, not in any way as a vendor of them, just as like what I consume publicly. So Coinbase has been kind of very public in this kind of anti woke sort of movement, but they've also put forward a lot of their people policies. And one time I was scrolling LinkedIn, and Melanie, I thought it was you, because it was like this, we have this first and best offer for job candidates, and we have these like really rigorous performance management standards. And I wasn't paying attention. And then it was Coinbase. And I was like, well, that's funny. So I dug a little deeper and was like, from what I could tell, just again, from the outside, just a random person on the internet, we, Athena, a company that has been public about our commitment to inclusion, shares a lot of people practices with a company that has been taken publicly a different stance. And the reason, I think, is that these policies are merit policies. That's what they are intended to do. They're intended to find the best candidate, because I think, like, you and I at least share the perspective that the best candidate does not mean the whitest candidate or the malest candidate. It means the best candidate. And so I think, unfortunately, because the stuff in where I'm gesturing widely, I'll leave my hand over here, the things in that bucket were way more public. That's been what's been associated with DEI training. Whereas I think if we had spent much more time just gesturing over here in the bucket of like merit-based policies, I think the backlash would be much less intense, because turns out I have not met someone who's really upset about structured performance reviews, with the exception of every manager ever, because they are annoying and they take a lot of time. But like, with that annoyance aside, like, I think the general principle of you shouldn't just be arbitrarily promoting, firing, and hiring people, there's like pretty universal agreement. Here I end.
I have a question, which is, what do you think triggered this? Why, if DEI and meritocracy are basically the same thing, why do you think DEI training in general missed the mark? Why hasn't it been more tied to the business? Why isn't it more tied to the business? Why did we decide to offer and create a DEI training?
Oh my God, Melanie, so many hard questions. Okay, I'm going to go, and then I'm going to need some help, because these are tricky. And some
I have thoughts, so I'm ready. Yeah.
Good. Okay. So why was this such a universal answer? I have a kind of maybe a really like too obvious answer, which is it was the easiest thing to do. So we were all sort of watching the news. Black Lives Matter became such a large part of the conversation at this like point in time. And I think companies were like, well, I could roll out really structured, you know, whatever, performance reviews. But somehow that does not feel like that has the raw energy that like I'm attempting to meet this moment with. Or I could say we're hiring a chief diversity officer and we're rolling out unconscious bias training and like the end, like, what are your questions? We did the thing. Because I think the things, you know, that are much more about kind of finding merit, they're not actually that like interesting. They're not spicy. They're not, you kind of have to keep someone's attention for a long time. So that is my, that's the answer to the first question, but I think we should stay here for a minute. Melanie, you were, you know, in an HR seat at this time. You saw a lot of companies responding. Like, what's your answer as to like why we got to maybe the wrong tool for the right problem?
Yeah, it's not super different from your perspective. I'll say that, you know, I'll say the really tough thing, which is from an optics perspective, I think a lot of companies were scrambling. They wanted a quick and easy solution that was visible. And so the easiest things obviously are always the surface level things. And to your point, maybe this is an overly tough word, but I can't think of a better one. So, you know, a little bit performative in nature. I always think of, for example, job descriptions started saying right away, like, we value diversity and we are looking for diversity. And then they would hire people to post jobs on quote unquote diversity boards, as opposed to trying to understand the underlying issues. Well, okay, why aren't you getting a more diverse set of candidates applying? Probably because you're doing things like requiring 7 years experience for a junior level role, probably because you're arbitrarily requiring a bachelor's degree for a role that doesn't require it if you've got the experience, right? Not really understanding these underlying issues that can lead to diversity issues. I think that's one. The other thing is, I think, to be honest, when it comes to DEI, I think a lot of people say they understand the business case, but they don't. I think it's sort of like, yes, I know in theory that I'm supposed to value DEI, but I'm not sure why. Yes, I know in theory it leads to more innovation, but I haven't actually seen the dots connected myself. So I'm going to do it, but it's more of like a a thing that I do in a silo. I'm actually going to share a spicy take, okay? Everybody kill me in the comments. But I actually don't think that DEI should ever be treated in a silo, because I think that's the underlying issue. I actually personally think that, listen, I have a lot of respect and value for anyone who has DEI expertise. And also, I think that if there is a separate DEI department or a separate DEI role, I don't personally see how you can effectively enact the change that you are looking to see in the things that require more DEI focus and a lens. So as an example, if you bring in someone with a DEI title or a DEI department, typically what they tend to focus on is the things you're talking about, right? How do we build awareness around different cultures? How do we educate people on different life experiences? And I'm not saying that's not valuable, but it's very hard to connect the dots between that and how do I make sure that everyone is being effectively set up for success? How do I make sure that promotion decisions are based on merit and not based on unconscious bias? And so I think the solution is you need to be looking at every single thing with a DEI lens versus let's plan out our performance reviews. Oh, and separately, can you focus on DEI? I just don't understand how you can effectively enact change if you aren't doing the two together. And I'll say also the unspoken thing that I think was part of the issue, in my opinion, maybe another spicy take, hopefully not, as to why I think the two were in a silo for so long, is that I think that many people didn't understand the fundamental underlying issue that it has never been a meritocracy, right? It's not that it was a meritocracy and then DEI came in and now it's not a meritocracy. It's that it was never a meritocracy. DEI efforts were aimed or supposed to be an attempt to actually make things a meritocracy. And what's happening now is because the two were treated in a silo, I think, unfortunately, people are picking up on some instances in which it doesn't feel like the two things were aligned. So
I have this
go ahead.
Craziest question.
Okay, please.
Do you think there are ever businesses where like you can't tie DEI to the business case because there isn't a connection?
Okay, fair question. We've actually talked about this a lot. I think I'm going to be honest and say I think that yes and no is the answer. I think that, for example, we've talked about this a lot. We genuinely, as a company, have gotten so much value out of having a diverse set of perspectives on our team and a diverse set of work styles. So you and I are I think personally, we're the most annoying work styles. I think you and I are like creatives. We're like, I got an idea, let's run with it. And then we've got people on our leadership team, rightly so, who are like, this is like the 10th thing that you've like tried to spin off before you even seen the success of the other ones. Can we slow it down? Can we put some process in place? And I think that's right. That's effective. You need that healthy tension. And so
but
absolutely.
Just to pay devil's advocate, I think someone would say that wasn't the type of DEI that, say, job descriptions were looking for. They weren't saying, bring me your chaos candidates and your structured thinkers. They were sort of tying it to many, not all, immutable characteristics, plus sort of weirdly veterans, which I just always find kind of funny because it's sort of like not an immutable characteristic. And yet, like, there was always a joke at a consulting firm was that with veteran ERG groups being the least diverse groups, which is kind of funny or dark. I don't know.
I mean, fair enough. I think it's a good direct question to ask because I think what we're getting to is diversity just race and gender? Or is diversity true diversity in all respects? I think diversity, in order for it to be effective, needs to be diversity in all respects. You could hire a diverse set of genders and race and not have diversity of thought, not have diversity of approach. On the flip side, if you are a marketing agency and you have just one age or one gender or one race, how are you supposed to effectively market to a broad demographic of people, right? You're going to miss the obvious. So I do think there are very real ways that diversity of all kinds benefits the company. I think where it gets tricky, and to be honest, I don't know that you and I have determined where we land on this. So very curious to hear where other people land, is I think that part of the DEI movement, which again, I have no opinion on this yet because I'm still reflecting, is Well, at what point does diversity stop being to the benefit of the company? And if it stops being to the benefit of the company, are we still responsible for that? Should we be? And so an obvious example is, you know, partnering with vendors, right? So for many companies, they really ask, hey, can you explain, you know, your own employee demographic breakdown? Can you commit to be, can you be commit to, you know, do you have DEI initiatives that you commit to? You know, are you minority owned? Are you whatever the case may be? And to me, the question that I have not answered yet, is I can't personally necessarily connect that to a business need. And so if I can't connect it to a business need, does that mean that we should do it anyway because it's, you know, quote unquote, the right thing to do? Or is that an area where, you know, we have to make a decision as a business that this is actually pulling away from our business priorities and it's not the right use of our interest and time?
Yeah, because I think that businesses don't toss out things that they just like fundamentally believe move the business forward, at least in a very flippant way, right? If you were like, hey, Roxy, I'm like, let's just get rid of the sales team. I'd be like, oh, like, why would we do such a thing? And so I do think that the most compelling examples, or like instances rather, I've seen, or maybe said another way, the most strongly held commitments to diversity seem to come from ones, businesses in which they really do believe it moves the business forward, because then they are holding on to that initiative the way I hold on to our sales team, because I'm like, where do you think, you know, like this, the business hinges on this in a way that I feel like it was sort of performative and it was like, yeah, it was some nice stuff for the website, but like, if you take it down, you take it down, it's not the end of the world. Then it kind of makes sense that business is very, sort of without a fight, let go of these initiatives that they didn't, that weren't really deeply rooted in the business to begin with, because they weren't, I mean, because even like hearing you talk about the sort of what actual DEI initiatives are, like in a way, this meant no offense, it's boring. It's a lot of like technical details about like, how do you make a job description? How do you publicize a job description? How do you create a really structured interview process that isn't just like, you know, hey, would you like to go to CrossFit with me in the morning? And maybe we'll talk a little bit about, you know, business, but otherwise I'm just going to make a snap judgment on whether I like you. An interview style I'm really interested in conducting, Melanie, as a side note. But yeah. yeah. So like, I think it's just like doing, boring kind of like really in the weeds work, isn't splashy in either direction. And I think that's why it's also not in the crosshairs now.
I do remember asking you about this. I think I asked you point blank, like, do you think we should get rid of our DEI training? Like, is it no longer valuable? And your answer was like, no, it is, right? We just have to reframe how we're talking about it. I'm curious to know, yes, we're tying it all in together, but are there any other things that you would recommend if we're talking about DEI on its own? Like, for example, a DEI training, what should that cover? What should people be thinking about?
I mean, I think it's really specific to the business in some ways. And then in others, I guess there are universal sort of characteristics. So some of them are just like the law. Like, I think sometimes people are still sort of surprised to learn, unfortunately, or whatever, that like, you cannot discriminate on the basis of these characteristics. I think making it really clear what discriminate looks like. I think sort of people might have like in their heads, like a very kind of old school, for lack of a better term, perception, but it's like, you know, no, it can be a lot of really, really small things, like small things that kind of add up, like when you do your happy hours, are all of your work events happy hours, you know, like these sorts of things that I think don't get lumped in like in the maybe very black and white sense of the term, but like, they impact like an employee's day-to-day experience. That's kind of the best I got. What do you have?
I really like the idea of focusing, yes, on all employees to make sure that we have an aligned, shared understanding of what DEI means, what an inclusive culture looks like, why it's so important that we focus on these things. And almost more importantly, I like the idea of managers and leadership being really well trained on this, because you and I were talking about this, that I think far too many people get overlooked in their skill sets and abilities simply because a number of things. Hey, you don't have the same thinking preference as me. And so I interpret that as, I remember, okay, I'll give an example actually, because I like talking specifics. I remember one time I was leading a manager training, and it was a sales leader, and I was talking about, hey, to make sure you're setting everyone up for success, you should make sure that, like, if your expectations are that you want an aggressive salesperson who's asking proactively for promotions, you should just say that so that people know the rules of the game and either they can do it or they can't do it. And I remember this sales person saying, yeah, no, I want to see if they can do it. And if they can't do it, then for me, that's a sign that they're not good enough. And here's why that struck me is because, without going into too much detail, because I don't want to make it tied to like any one specific thing. I think this could apply to any identity or gender or whatever. I personally was raised with the belief of if you are too loud, the louder you speak, the less work you're getting done. And so the best way to get ahead is to keep your head down and work super hard, and then people will notice your work and then promote you. And of course, lo and behold, I enter the corporate world and that's not how it works at all. But nobody explained that to me. And so...
Yeah, you're saying like, make the implicit explicit, like in all different ways. And it's not like for gender or like, I feel like this comes up a lot with like meeting agendas and like chaos monkeys like us are like, oh, what? We don't need an agenda. I'll just like roll into the meeting. And like, there are people who can find that really distracting. And that's actually reasonable because forcing us to write a memo beforehand, like sharpens our thinking. It allows more people to participate. You hire them because they have a brain. So maybe their participation is going to like tell you that you were wrong. Like you're saying, like sort of stuff like that versus.
I think so. And I would go so far to say if we, you know, believe the fundamental understanding that DEI is about creating a truly merit-based culture, I would go so far as to say that inclusive leadership is actually how do you maximize the potential across your team. That's what that training actually is. And so, yeah, I think there is a place for it. And it's just, are we doing it effectively? Are we tying it directly into the business?
If the role of annoying CEO, because it is one in which I inhabit deeply to my bones, I feel like an annoying CEO would say, Melanie, there are enough people, even to your sales example, yeah, who are going to proactively ask for promotions without me having to tell them. Why do you, like, basically, like, the talent pool is big enough. Why do I have to go out of my way to make a meeting agenda to do this? Like, given there are enough people who could rise to the top that I wouldn't have to have, like, proactively, for lack of a better term, taught them.
I think that's a fair point. I think it goes here. I have two thoughts. One is, I don't necessarily think you have to do it, right? So you and I have actually talked about this in Athena interviews recently, where we're kind of at the point where, honestly, we're so strapped for time that we actually don't want managers having to do too much work to grow their direct reports. And so we're actively in our interview processes being upfront with candidates and saying, hey, we need someone who can function autonomously and isn't looking for a super hands-on manager or someone who's going to be partnering with them. We want someone who's not going to be, for lack of a better word, turned off or demoralized by a manager who really just checks in when you need to check in versus being like, hey, I'm actively partnering with you, because that's the need of the business. So I think if the need of the business is, hey, we're moving quickly, we have enough talent, great, go for it, I think you can make a real business case for not moving in that direction. But I personally think that there is absolutely great talent. I would argue sometimes better talent that you are overlooking simply because you are unwilling to open, you know, the door to how you maximize value. I'll give a perfect example. I think I'm a good example of this, to be honest.
I was going to give you, I was like, I once knew a woman named Melanie.
Okay, let's talk about it. Roxanne. When I first joined, I had made all of, I think, 3 LinkedIn posts in my entire career, and all of them were, hey, we're hiring. And you pushed me so hard to be like, no, you can do this. You got this. And here's the thing. Listen, maybe I'm tooting my own horn. You are here to
toot that horn.
Rein me in. Okay. But imagine if you had said, you know what, Melanie, I don't want to waste time in investing in the potential I see in you. I'm just going to fire you. I'm going to hire somebody else who is already has a LinkedIn.
A more middle of the road. Like,
okay, that's true. That's true. But let's go the extreme. For the listeners, let's go the extreme. You could have just fired me and said, I'm going to find someone who's already got a LinkedIn presence. To be honest, first of all, I don't think that's an effective or cost-efficient business strategy. You would have lost all that time. You would have had to find another replacement. Could you have found someone who replicated? I don't know. Or you could have just taken the time, invested, because you truly believed in that potential. And I don't know, here we are 3 years later, seems to be working pretty well.
I mean, I think it is but the hilarious example in that the case for DEI, she's in this room. Here she is. It sort of feels vaguely like a Veep adjacent, like plot line.
I really got to watch that show.
Oh my God, it's so good. And it's probably particularly good right now. But I also think it's very true, because I think that if I were talking to the same CEO who's like, why are you telling me I have to, you know, do a bunch of work just to get my people to do work? And if you actually frame it as like, do you know there are people on discount out there in the market? And like, they will be really good, but they will have characteristics that other businesses might overlook, which like I think we've talked about, like makes me feel a little bit uncomfy saying, because it's like the most capitalist possible version argument for DEI, but maybe that's the point. Like maybe that's how you make it stay, because like, Melanie, the economic value you have brought to this business, even if I did not like you, which I happen to really like you.
Jeez, thank God.
But this would be a terrible time to find out. If no one asked, but there are a couple of things I don't like. You like a lot of animals, including ones that are utterly unacceptable, i.e. rats and possums, and you're vegan. But I will overlook both of those things, because you have brought so much value to the business, both in your brand building efforts and like internally. And you know what's interesting is you did the same thing for both, especially when you started. You were kind of like, I don't know a lot about this, but maybe you guys are doing something totally wrong over in product land. And I think that you are not always right, but you brought brought insights from a different perspective, but you were very hesitant to share them. And in the LinkedIn space, it was like a perfect example of, you know, when I was like, hey, maybe go post on LinkedIn, or you said it, I don't know, I'll take credit for it, no problem. You were like, I don't know if anyone wants to hear what I have to say. And it was like, that is a statement that a lot of women say. And like, I don't think it's true, but I think it causes them to never find out if it was true. And I think that's a good place to land.
All right, so I'm gonna put you on the spot right now, because as you know, what I don't want is people to walk away and be like, you guys just talked a whole lot and I don't actually know what to do with any of this. So direct question, Roxanne, I hope you are prepared. You've talked a lot about where things have gone wrong and where DEI training has missed the mark. So how do we do better? What does better look like for companies who are listening to you and thinking, all right, you won me over, but I don't know what to do about it?
I think it is a bunch of small things. So it's not, I don't have one like headline thing for you, like do this and all things will be great. Also, my kid is coming home, so he may just participate in this discussion. So I think it is a bunch of small things that make it more and more likely that the next Melanie at your company joins your company can be effectively evaluated to figure out if she rocks or not. I think like a subcomponent of that is like, I think there's this perception that the DEI movement sort of says like all people of a certain race cannot be fired. All people of a certain race cannot, you know, like there's like this, and it's like, no, this is like, if done right, I think it has to be like, we are not hiring a woman because we need a lady face is, you know, on our website. It is, we are hiring this specific woman because she demonstrated these skills. And we think in this environment, she is going to be an A player. And if she is not, we are going to fire her. That's how it works. I think it's just a bunch of like really little things, but I will say maybe the one big thing that I think is the area where most companies are going to really struggle is tone at the top really matters. And tone at the top is the thing I think about like in the army, you talk about in the compliance world. And it's just like, what are the perceptions that leadership is giving? Because employees are so aware of what gets, what's valued in an organization. So like if at Athena, I don't know, I wore a baseball cap every day. I guarantee people would start wearing baseball caps on Zooms. It's just like the small little things that leaders do that make people be like, okay, cool. We're a baseball hat wearing org. I'm not because I don't have a sports
You team. Mean how Anne always says, oh, let me noodle
judge,
on that.
Noodle, judge.
And now it's, I literally can't stop saying it. Yeah. Okay.
We judge things because we have a founder who says judge. And companies will notice if their, say, HR teams have implemented merit-based promotion policies, but their senior leadership makes a lot of snide comments about how, like, you know, they're not looking for a woman engineer, they're looking for a good engineer. Like, those little things, those things about, like, hiring women in their 30s sucks because, like, man, do they pop out a lot of babies. If you say one comment like that in a year, it will undermine the 800 things your organization has done to effectively, you know, find, promote, retain, you know, talent. Like, that's the answer. It's a bunch of really hard stuff. Sawi, ask me to solve global warming next, you know.
You got it. Adding it to the list for our next episode recording.
Yeah. I've been waiting my whole life to say this. If you like this episode, please like, subscribe, and follow us on LinkedIn, because that's the only social media platform where we hang out.